It puts the slime on its skin, or it gets the Pose Giant Jackpot again. It puts the slime on its skin, or it gets the Pose Giant Jackpot again. Squirt me with
all right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Tyler, what are you doing, dude?
I'm just chilling, man.
Just
in
chilling.
Between exams.
Just, yeah. Just staring at your belly button in a mirror. Is that what you did? I don't know. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. Anyway, dude. So we're back. We're live. We're back. We had a pre-recorded episode last week. I'm back from the Northwoods, Tyler.
You got lucky when you came up here. It was southern weather
lucky,
up here.
Babe. I'll tell you, every time I go up there, it's always interesting. I got so freaking lucky when I went up north. So for those of you that do not know, I just spent a week at the Muskoshapo. I think you can find them at Muskoshapo. I don't know how that's spelled. But I just spent a week up at the Muskie Shop, and it was like 65 and 70 degrees every day in Monaco, Wisconsin in November. It was glorious. Tower, I actually was burning up. Me and Jody went up and we took all kinds. Like, of course, we were freaking out thinking it's going to be frigid. We took nothing but warm clothes. That was it. It was just like, I took like two t-shirts. So basically, I was just like stealing clothing from the Muskie Shop every day because there's like I took like fleece. I was taking like thermal underwear, you know, thinking it's going to be like 25 degrees out. But no, it was glorious. It was wonderful. But for those of you that don't know, I just completely redid the muskieshop.com. I know my way around the ones and zeros. That's them binaries. Them matrixes. Tyler, that's where me and you met, was in the matrixes.
Yeah, in the computer.
we met on Grindr. Anyway, so this ones and zeros here on the internet, we redid the muskieshop.com there, and yeah, that's why I was up there. So you walk in, Tyler, and we've got a Northwoods tackle shop that has like iPads running around everywhere.
It's basically a Muskie spaceship.
It is the Tesla of Muskie fishing. It's amazing. So go over, check out the muskieshop.com. I know you've been there. We've all been there. I'm on the front of it right now. It's awful pretty. Thank you. I did it. But you got Muskie Shop apparel at the top. And this is just like complete narcissism run amok. You can buy a signature Steve Paul hoodie now. Not a joke. It's the Muskie Shop Mineral Freeze Fleece hoodie. Back in black, Steve Paul version 1. If that is not narcissism at its best, I didn't name it. It's not. I didn't say, hey, can I have a signature hoodie? They said, hey, we're giving you a signature hoodie. You can buy a hoodie that I wear. I have not worn it, so you will not get bed bugs, okay? It's not like I've had it on my body, but it's something I would wear. It's there. Tyler,
is your face on it, Steve?
No, it's the freaking one that you were looking at. It's the, like, kick-ass all-black one. It's got the sweet,
oh.
Yeah, that one. It's pretty mean, folks.
Fleece, it's a mean one.
Fleece line, 100% polyester, comfort style, all-one hoodie. Quotation marks, it looks mean. Steve Paul, Muskie 360.
It's very southerly, comforty.
It is. Listen, they're going to bury me in one of these boys. It's not often to get your name on a hoodie. Or not on it, but named after. But that's cool. So all the apparel's up here. You know, the other thing that's on this, and you guys have all done it, and I'm just going to cut to the chase. We have all bought something from the Muskie Shop, and then Elmer Jensen calls and goes, we didn't have that color. I fixed it, okay? That's it. I fixed it. So if you order from the muskieshop.com, guess what? If you order a bait and it says it's available on the internet, you're going to get it. So it's like
you gets it.
I'm looking here. Let's look at them Lee Lure Boilermakers. Boy, I got a Boilermaker pulled up here. I'm going to make a boil. Black Shark. Got it. If I buy it right now, guess what? They're not going to call and say I'm out. So a lot of people go, why are they always out? I ordered the, and I ordered this and the. The problem is there's 100,000 baits in the building, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
We counted them. Okay, so for anybody asking, they have like all their backlog and all their storage. So me and my lovely wife Jody have worked for about 6 months on getting this set up and doing this, so they finally have a solid inventory and a system in place where they can track everything of what's walked out of the building. Because what would happen is people would place an online order then like somebody buy it in the store. So we fixed all that, so no more of that crap. If you call up and say I order, well, I'm looking at the Chaos Poseidon 10 and you order, what is this, got the custom walleye, guess what, it's in stock. Oh, that one's not. See, good point. So, custom electric perch is in stock right now. Custom walleye's out. They're waiting on them boys to send that over there. And so, you look at this and you go, real quickly, you can tell what they got, what they don't have on the shelves at that very moment. And if you order, it'll fix all that crap. No more phone calls from the Muskie shop. No more.
No more, sir.
They're going to call and say, hey, thanks for your business and all that fun stuff, but... Yeah, that's about it. The other thing cool, Tyler, I didn't even get a chance to tell you because me and you hooked up while we were up there and hung out for a minute. But a bunch of people came to the shop and said hello. So I appreciate that. That was really cool. That was a phone alarm to schedule a postal pickup. I apologize. But a bunch of people stopped by the shop and said, hey, you know, you said you're going to be here. And they came by. Some people bought some suckers. Some people came and bought some Muskie baits. That was fun. So thank you for dropping in and saying hello.
Hello, Steve.
Hello. Other than that, man, shield rods. How's your shield rod, Tyler?
I like it a lot.
I like it.
I made mine look real cool. I got,
you put some, I got some glitter paint on it.
Hot pink
glitter paint. Have you been bubble, dude? Have you been using bubble paint on your rod again? Like I wrote my name on it in bubble paint.
So, yes, you caught me again,
dude. That would be awesome. All right. Like we've got to get like really bad stickers to put on our rods,
like Hello Kitty stickers, like, or something.
Like just like be like, I swear to God, I saw the guy palming his reel, and it had a Hello Kitty on the side of it. That would be wicked. Like, why do you have a Wolverine sticker on your rod? I've got, like, strawberry shortcake and Wolverine stickers all over my rod. What do you think? Out there just looking real tough. I'm a big badass musky fisherman. I got a strawberry shortcake sticker on my rod. That'd be awesome, dude. Like, you know how you know how everybody has all these stickers on their boat, Tyler, where it's like Musky Shop, Joe Booker Outdoors, Phantom. They put them on there so they look like they're in the Bass Pros and like they're endorsed or something, or cool. We should start putting really dumbass stickers on our boats. Like if you got on the boat and it was like Presidential Fitness Award. I got my 8th grade Presidential Fitness Award sticker right next to Care Bears. I'm just throwing
that
it out
be
there.
Amazing.
You know, I'm begging for a big old possum sticker that says the Muskie Shop on it.
Oh, my gosh. They have to make that. It'd be amazing.
The possum thing, guys, the possum joke, the possum truthisms here. They love it. A bunch of people came in trying to get suckers for possums. They're not trading live meat for live meat. It's got to be a possum for a shield rod, but... That's the craziest. I'm sorry I got on that tangent already about putting a Care Bear sticker on my boat, but I'm probably going to do it now. I'd be like, yeah, man, I'm endorsed by the Muskie Shop, Joe Booker Outdoors, Care Bears, Power Pro. you just sort of slide it in there.
That'd be great.
I give every muskie the Care Bear stare. Sorry. Man, you, I bet you guys freaking wish this was pre-recorded so it wasn't be so stupid. Anyway, get over to themuskieshop.com for all your muskie fishing needs. No, I'm really proud of it. The one thing I did want to, the reason I brought it up on the podcast is if you guys see any stuff on there that you're like, hey man, change this, let me know. If you don't like something, let me know. At least pass that on. Constructive criticism, please. But if, you know, if you're like, hey, this would be better, shoot a message at any time. It can be in 2 weeks or in 2 years. Let me know. I'll be sort of heading that whole project up and helping them out there. So if there's anything that you see, but like I said, no more screwed up orders from there. Tyler, we've got so many freaking questions coming up.
You did forget something, though, Steve.
What was that, my dude?
Your birthday cake.
Oh, my God. I forgot. I celebrated my birthday at the Muskie Shop. That was a low moment in my life. Listen, no birthday's good when you got to share it with John McNeack.
Poor John.
Poor John. I love John McNeack. He's funnier than hell. No, we were, Tyler, you can attest, we were up there working our guts out.
Yeah, you guys were
going crazy.
Busting it.
But Tyler, the man Andrews, brought me a birthday cake from the, what was that, the Green Bay Walmart, or where the hell did you go there?
The Minocqua Walmart.
Minocqua Walmart.
I was picking up a cake that your wife ordered for you.
Yep.
And they did not have it. So I got to choose your cake.
Tyler improvised.
I improvised because I'm a smart man. I think right. Quickly on my feet.
Tell them what
it is. I entered the Muskie Shop with a Disney princess cake.
It was beautiful. Didn't it say, what did it say? Happy birthday, Princess Steve, I think.
Yeah, it said, happy birthday, Steve, and you're our princess.
You're our princess. They beat, everybody beat me up after that. No, it was funny. Hearty har, har har, I hate you. So, no, it was funny. Thanks for the cake. We had a good time. But nothing says like a fun birthday like counting hundreds of Medusas. Okay, so one, two. I'll say this: I'm musky baited out, Tyler.
I don't even want to see him anymore.
I don't want. Done. I came here. I'm here in the bait cave, and it's just like. I've got PTSD of musky baits. I've seen them all. Ask me about a musky bait. I know about it. Guaranteed. I had 400,000 of them in my hands. Cool little bait. I'll tell you this, and I was telling Jay this today, man. Cool freaking bait that I hadn't been thrown yet was the Lake X Little Bastard.
Ooh.
Had a big old day on that, boys. Dick it, dick it, dick it, dick it. That's a good bait. What else was cool? I'm trying to think of stuff that was actually I'll go off on a tangent here real quick because I told you this, Tyler, but baits that I took home from the Muskie Shop that are I hadn't thought about getting that were cool. That Kodiak Navin 12 inch. I don't know if you've seen that from Chaos, which is like this gigando dive and rise. It is a formidable bait. I threw that and I really like it. I thought it was like, it's sort of like, it's Chaos. It's funny. It's like, seems like Chaos does sort of like the generic version of a lot of the stuff that Lee makes. So they make like, Lee makes a Lee Lures, Lee from Today's Angler, for those that don't know, he makes like the flap tail and then like Chaos and they work together. They're sponsored by the rods and all that stuff. But they make like the Big Mama Psycho, and it's like they make like these similar baits. And I thought that Kodiak Navin would be sort of like a similar bait to that. It's not. It's actually a really cool bait in its own right, but it's a big bait for the 12. That was cool. The Shum Shum Tap Dancer brought one of those home. Really cool bait. What are some other stuff that I hadn't thrown that I brought back? The H2O. Barbarian, that's a neat bait. Their big rattle trap that they make there has the screwing weights. I'm trying to think of some other cool stuff that I may have taken out of inventory, if you know what I mean. When you're counting, Tyler, you just minus one. That's it. Minus
made
one.
For men, not boys.
Made for men. I did not bring one of those home, guys. If you want to know what the this bite is for men, not for boys, call Jay at the Muskie Shop and ask him for the man bite. This bite is for man. What else was it? I'll say this, dude. The best looking baits in the store, bar none, are the Big Fork lures. I was blown away. I brought home a reef digger. I think it's called a reef digger. It's like their metal lip crank. Okay, so the backstory on this, there's the inside baseball. And I talked to Jim that owns the store and Jay about them a bunch. So the guy that makes the Big Fork lures, which are the sand cats you've heard me talking about, and they make a few other baits. The dude is, I thought he'd be like a young guy, like he's going to be like in his 30s, 40s. Apparently he's in his late 60s, early 70s, and does the best paint work I've seen in the Muskie game thus far. Like consistent, cool colors.
The Black Mamba color?
Black Mamba.
Oh my gosh, it looks... All the colors look amazing.
They're probably like the sickest as far as like I'm not talking like some. Well, I saw some guy on the internet did two baits. Like this guy's doing a bunch of baits, but his colors are sick. There's one I got. It's like a purple sparkle walleye-eyed thing, which is really cool. I'm trying to think of other baits because I brought home a bunch of weird stuff, and that's what I'm saying is like. You know, everybody hears about the same crap. I'm trying to think of stuff that was like funky, that was oddball. The Livingston Headhunters. Cool freaking bait. Just saying. Have you thrown one, Tyler?
I have. They cool looking. I like them a lot.
I like them. I don't know if I'm going to use the bleep bloop sounds in them. It's like, they got them electronic bait fish bleep bloops. Don't know if I'm going to use the bleep bloops. I like the way that bait works. They've got the big one and the smaller one. And as a bait, I really hadn't spent a lot of time with. I brought two of the big ones back, two of the small ones back. Really cool. And I'm trying to, like, everybody's always looking for cool baits. So I'm trying to say, just off the top of my head, I brought back a big warlock. I've always liked the small warlocks. The big warlock's really cool. God, what else stood out to me? And it's not bucktail time of the year. Nobody's thinking bucktails really, but there's a lot of cool, like funky oddball bucktails that you never look at. You know, everybody thinks Mayhem or Booker or all this other stuff. There are a lot of small manufacturers in there. So get on the website and just like, if you go to the bucktail section and just look at all the bucktails, you'll find a bunch where it's like stuff that's sort of forgotten by time. The one that stood out to me that everybody was raving about was the RJs, which I don't think you've seen those towers. It's the dude's airbrushing the blades and stuff. They're pretty cool. I will shut up about baits. I could sit here and prattle on forever. We have a bunch of ketchup to do, Tyler.
Ketchup. And mustard.
So we got questions. We're going to go right into it. Here it comes. The first one says, Mr. Dude. It's from a guy, his... email says, Mr. Dude, I like it. He says, hey guys, what are you guys doing on days with scattered showers in the fall to catch these fish? Does the move of these fish change? Do they go shallow or deep? What do I need to do to up the chance of getting a fish in the net? Thanks. Love the podcast. Well timed, Mr. Dude. I'm telling you, I've been a fool in the rain. When it is raining in the fall, I am doing really good, and I'm not talking, and there's like two different levels, and I was thinking about this a bunch today because I fished. I actually told you, Tyler, and I didn't read this question. Like, it was a downpour today. When it is raining, and it is, I'm talking like if it's pounding the rain, the bite is not going to be that great. You sort of got to lay it on their head, right? It becomes a proximity game. If the rain is sort of like moderate to slow and drizzly, top water, absolutely. When it's pounding the rain, I'm going spinner baits and glide baits and getting a little deeper. My theory has always been when the rain is pounding and the top is like machine gun fire to them, you know, there's a lot of noise on the surface, but they're not that deep in the fall. So they're going to be on those shallow edges and the shallow spots. So don't be afraid of top water and don't be afraid of stuff that's just barely subsurface or sort of grounded on the bottom of those shallow locations in the fall in a rain shower. I know that works up there too, Tyler. You've done that a bunch where you get out and it's not a drizzle, but it's raining and you're doing good with top raiders and fat bastards.
Yeah,
and all that
absolutely.
Stuff. And a lot of people just don't think rain. I mean, it's like we all wait around for cloudy days, right? We're all going, man, it's too damn sunny. It's too sunny. It's too sunny. And then the clouds come and they bring rain with them. And then everybody just does, for some reason, everybody just goes brain dead and starts throwing too deep most of the time. I don't get it. I really don't.
I just keep fishing. I don't really care what's going on.
Right.
I'm just like, moon, whatever, weather, eh.
Just
I'm
fish. Fishing. My problem is this. I'm terrified to musky fish in the rain, Tyler. Ask me why.
Why is that, Steve?
Because if you catch one, you might get him wet. Oh, moving on, because that was stupid. Doug Kurtwood says, I'm using a Calcutta 400 on a Daiwa Bucktail Special Rod. Great for bucktails, of course, but not a great rod for big baits. What rod do you recommend for under $200? I know St. Croix are awesome, but too expensive. Man, you would think I planted that question. We all know the answer to that. Shield.
Musky Shop Shield Rod. Shield Rod. By the shield rod.
Wow, that's creepy, Tyler. We are just in sync. I'm a big shield rod fan. Tyler's a big shield rod fan. I brought home a stack. I looked like I was robbing the place when I walked out with my more shield rods this trip. I love them, and it's bang for the buck. The 9-footer. So I've got the muskyshop.com pulled up. 9-foot heavy, 9-foot extra heavy telescoping models, $169.99. There you go. Doesn't get cheaper than that. You can get cheaper than that. You guys have heard me talk about it in the past if you've been listening the entire time. I threw even cheaper rods than this, but these rods are badass to the bone.
I love how they fit my rod locker. I got a 7.6 rod locker and it fits in perfectly.
Well, me and you both have the same size rod lockers. And it's just like,
yes.
You know, I'm sorry. And Tyler, by the way, I'll diverge for a second. Have you seen the ad for like the new Lund Musky boat?
I have not yet.
It's wicked. I had a client send it to me. Mark, thanks for sending that to me. It's just like, if you had that boat, you wouldn't need a telescoping rod, but you need like $53,000 without the engine. You know, it comes with a 10-foot rod locker. Well, let's get real. A lot of listeners are fishing out of John boats and 1987 Rangers. You know, it's just like, it's all good and well. Like you hear musky guys go, you need a 10-foot 7 rod. Well, where am I going to put it? You know, how big's a truck bed? Aren't they like 4x8? You know, what are you going to do? Put your 10-foot rod. So that's, I love the telescoping for that. I mean, I have one 9.6 rod that doesn't collapse, and just bringing it in out of the house is a pain in the ass. So I love the telescoping rods. The one thing I'll tell you, everybody asks, and that's all I'm fishing on the boat now. All my client rods, everything, it's all shield rods. And, a lot of people ask if I've ever had trouble with the telescoping rod, right? No, I haven't. Once you pull it out and you got it in place, and I snug it up quite a bit. I like wrench on it a little bit to the end. Like at the end of the day, when I collapse, I have to tap it on like the deck of the boat, like pretty stout. So they're not moving. And I'm talking 10, 12, 13 hour days in the water. There's no torque in the rod, nothing. They handle the fish great. There's no question. But that is my go-to rod right now, is the Musky Shop Shield Series rods. They got the 9-foot and the 9 extra heavy. And the other thing, let me look here, is they have the 8-footers. So they got an 8-foot heavy, 8-foot extra heavy, and the 8.6. So if you're not into the nines, those are non-telescoping. It's a one piece. So if like you're looking for an 8.6, interesting combo I had there at the Muskie shop with a dude is this guy just flat told me, he's like, I just don't want to throw anything bigger than 8.6. He was talking rods with me. And I just said, you know, there's an advantage here. There's an advantage here. This, 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 and this. He said, I don't want to relearn how to work my baits. And I guess, you know, I'm going to do a video on it here very shortly once I get some time to breathe because I've been so busy. The one thing you got to realize, if you go to like the nine footers, there's a huge tactical advantage when it comes to figure eighting, period, right?
Oh my gosh, it's insane.
It's insane. But don't worry about your jerk baits and all your other baits. Kick the rod off to the side a little bit more, right? Just hold it off to the side. Tyler, you've seen me work 9.6s and 10-foot rods with 6-inch phantoms. You know,
yeah,
so
I mean, you just have to change your angle.
Change your angle. Dude, I got a whole other thing, and this is like, I'm not trying to like be like super gear heady, but I just spent like a billion hours at the Muskie shop, so I'm totally like gear up all about some gear right now. I have to sort of backpedal on super reels. Okay. So you guys have heard me, and if you guys listen a bunch, you've heard me like piss and moan about like Lexus and Tranks. Got them Tranks. I got that Tranks 900. Tower have a Tranks 900. It's nearly double the size of a 500.
Wow.
It holds 900 yards of line. Okay. So, no. But I've sort of always like sort of crapped on the super reels, and the big thing being there's too much drag, which everybody either has their drag way too loose or way too tight. I picked up a Kuma Komodo. Okuma. Forged in the fires of Mount Doom in Tokyo. Actually, they're made in Korea. I'd never fished an Okuma like baitcaster reel. I have Okuma. What are they? They're the cheapo trolling reels. They have the Okuma Magdas or some piece of $50 crap. And they're good. They're just budget trolling reels. I grabbed one of their left-handed Okuma reels at the store, and it doesn't have too much drag. You can crank that thing all the way down and like two clicks back, and it's about perfect. And that's the one thing is like, you guys have heard me talk about like Lexus and talk about all these reels. Tyler, I watch you do it all the time with your reels. It's like, is it too tight? Is it soft? You know, the sweet spot on a lot of these reels is like hard to find. And that's one thing.
Yeah, it's not easy.
And it's not. And the thing about like the Kuma that I just realized, it has, I don't want to speak out of turn, so bear with me. I know we got a lot of ground to cover. Let me see if it has it on here. How much drag? I'm looking for the number. I don't see it as pounds of drag. I looked on the big old fancy internet, and it said like the total drag was like 14 pounds, right? Well, I've been fishing round reels, and for all you old farts, you know what I'm talking about, a round of boo only has 12.
Not much difference.
Not much difference, which is like I fish my boos cranked all the way down, which I know is like just about perfect, and then a half turn back. I did the same thing with the Okuma, and I went, well, if this thing tightens up during the course of the day or I hook a fish, I'm back in the drag immediately anyway, so I'm not that far off. Like you've heard me talk about the super reels and worried about the breakoffs and all that stuff. Just a little point of interest there. I will give you some more feedback on that reel as we go down the road, but I've fished that a little bit. I'm mixing it up between the two. I got to shut up because I got ADD like hell today. Next up is Kevin. He says, or KV, excuse me. He says, I love my Suix. Do you have any tips on keeping the nose beefed up and still running great? Love the podcast. Thank you, guys. And my prayers are with Elmer after his recent possum attack. F in the chat for Elmer, Tyler. F in the chat. Pay respects for you boomers that don't know what F in the chat means. It's not dirty. It's a internet meme. F in the chat for your sense of humor. We're all thinking of Elmer Jensen. Send your thoughts and prayers. Fruit baskets, whatever you want to send there. Here's the deal, KV, with Sueks. I've always thought the more gnarly they are, the better. It's sort of like bobby baits. Tyler, you probably saw a bobby bait at my house or an antique store. But
that looks completely destroyed, but it's still amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing, is like bobby baits were like, and they still are. They still make them. It's one of these baits, like the more banged up the nose is, it seems like the better it is. One thing that I've done is, if you, and now don't do this unless you know exactly how this Suic runs, is I've super glued the line tie before, right? And doing that makes it, you can't really tune it after that again. Like, so that sort of gives me a little insurance. I know that line tie's not going to pull out of the nose. I've never had the line tie pull out of a Suic, but you always worry about stuff like that. You can beef it up in that manner. One thing that I will do on a Suic that's dirt, if it's getting nitty gritty from banging rocks and really like working reefs and stuff, is I'll let it dry out. And then I might hit it with some super, or might hit it with a real thin layer of epoxy. And so the next time it's going there and it's banging around, it's just banging the epoxy off. And the thing is with a Suic is, once you got a good one, you got to take care of it. Because like, Suics are literally cedar pieces of wood. Some of them are horrible. Some of them are great. And I think a lot of people, when they buy a Suic, they buy one and they only have one Suic and they go, I don't know how to run these. And they just by happenstance got a crappy one. I mean, it's a fact, dude. And speaking of someone that has, I promise, I'm looking at the bait cave wall here. I am probably the proud owner of 400 Suics. That's not a joke. Tyler's seen it. I got the pictures to prove it. I'll put them up at some point. But, you know, my whole family, I inherited most of those. So I've got old ones, new ones, you name it. The Suics are a temperamental beast. And some of them are real bad and some of them are real good. Once you get one that runs really well, don't change it. Don't mess with it. Do minor repairs to keep that thing running where you want it. With that being said, for you guys that have never fished Suics or are newer to the Suic game, are the high impact Suics. And that's the plastic Suic that is meant to take that abuse, but they're pretty well dialed in. Let me put it this way. Those high impact Suics are as consistent as every other plastic bait, which most plastic baits, and I mean, Tyler, you know, you can get one, like one depth rater or one slammer that runs this way, and then the next one runs different, you know. Mm-hmm. But that high impact Suic gets things a little bit more dialed in. That might be a good place to start. I use those high impact Suics somewhat in rocks and reefs if I'm afraid of like banging up my quote unquote good Suics. So that's something to look at if you're really tearing the guts out of Suics often by banging rocks and reefs. If you haven't noticed the trend, if you're throwing Suics, you need to be banging rocks and reefs. You know, that's when they really shine. What do you think, Tyler? Do you do anything to yours? Do you just do like basic little touch ups and stuff?
I just fix the line tie if it gets all messed up or whatever, the metal tail on the end. Sometimes that will get all crazy. I don't do anything super insane to it. I never repaint them either. All the paint gets chipped off it, I'm like, we'll still catch fish. And you know what? It does.
Nastier the better when it comes to those things. And if it won't catch fish, spray paint it black and move on with your life. That's my rule with everything though.
Like my favorite baits, man, are the ones that have like almost no paint on them. Those are the best ones.
I won't even go there about like some of my e-bang I've done in the past where like people are like, ratty old musky bait for sale. And I'm sitting there going, they bought that at a garage sale and somebody caught a lot of fish on that. It's usually the scummier the better. That's the one thing I could get on a soapbox about, is like all the new cool baits and all this stuff. The muskies don't care about the paint jobs, and like guys are so weird about their baits, and I'm sitting here going, dude, don't repaint that or send it back to have refinished or all this crap, because you go, if it's catching fish, leave it alone, because it really doesn't matter, you know?
They don't care.
They don't care. My best Suics are so hook rashed up, it's like I mean, dude, God, okay, tangent. But, I mean, I actually fished through the sides of a triple D here recently. And you go, the hooks literally wore through the side of the bait, and it started leaking and taking in a bunch of water because I'd fished that thing to the point that the hooks wore holes in it. Not from fish bites, not from cracking it. Literally, hook rash ate through the side of the bait. It was catching fish up until the day that it was just dead. And you sort of look at it and you go, it had more hook rash than it had paint left. It's action. And the hierarchy of muskie fishing, when it comes to baits, action, profile, then color. I can catch a good muskie angler, can catch muskies on the wrong collar all day long.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. Right? You better get the action down first. Collar is not going to fix your game. Right? And that's the one thing. Okay, God, you can tell I haven't been on here in 2 weeks, Tyler. But I'm preaching. But collar is not going to fix your muskie game. You're not going to reach in the tackle box and miraculously pick the color that is going to just make one do something stupid. Like, if you can't fish gliders to begin with, having the right color is not going to do anything for you. So think action, right? Then we're thinking profile. And by profile, I mean, should it be a small profile or a big profile? Is it spring? Is it winter? Is it cold front? Is it warm front? Profile. Then color. And then think contrast. If it's dark, let's go with a black bait. If it's light, let's go with a white bait. Everything else is just details. You know, is it a lemon head so it's white with a little yellow? Is it fire? You know what I'm saying? Am I making sense? Or am I just...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I catch fish in all sorts of funky colors. I mean, it doesn't... Like, I'll catch fish in the morning on a freaking all-black crankbait, and at the end of the day, I'll catch something on a chartreuse crankbait.
Yeah, it doesn't...
And it's like, it doesn't... I'm like, it doesn't matter.
I've got... Dude, I got shallow raiders with no paint left where it's nearly clear plastic, and you go, well... Maybe I should spray paint that thing white again. I will shut up. Sorry about the tangents here. Nathan says, hey, thanks for all the help and info you guys give. Between using little clues to find bait fish and using castback strategies with different baits and slowing down, oh my God, my musky game has been kicking ass the last few months. Every time I go out, I at least see one fall or get a hit, and I can't thank you guys enough. I was able to seal the deal this weekend in Wisconsin on a great 800 Booker Tail. He said, I made it from a purple 10 buck and a couple purple skirts fishing the slop when there was warm weather and nobody else was seeing action. He says, my instincts told me that the spot where the birds are in 2 feet of water and I could go hit a bucktail into that area. Three casts later, she smashed it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, if you guys end up doing the road trip, okay, I'll skip that part. He's telling us where he fished. But... He goes on to say, thank you for all the input on the podcast and thanks for all the help on patterning and how to catch these things. Well, Nathan, you're welcome, man. That's what we're here for. That's awesome to hear back from you. You know, we were looking at that, man. That little warm front that came through up there, Tyler. Mm-hmm. Those bait fish were pushing up. And that's the thing is like...
They went shallow.
I can't tell you how many guys came into the muskie shop and I'm talking to them and they're going, we're not seeing anything. Right? And they're hanging meat or they're doing this. It's like, dude, it's been 70 degrees high for like 3 days. These dang fish are up shallow again. At least some of them.
Well, if you think about it, with, you know, sunlight is basically heat. And the shallowest parts of the lake is going to heat up first. So obviously they're going to be in there. You know what I'm saying? Like it's
a little Indian summer. Because we're coming in winter, a little Indian summer thing for everybody that's not going to deal with a close season or ice. When you get these Indian summer streaks, and that's what they got up there up north, because you guys had already had snow, and then you get 60s.
Yeah. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Not all of the fish are going to go shallow. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But if you get enough of a warm-up, those suckers are going to come up shallow, and they're going to get active. If there's bait fish in the shallows, guess what's going to be there? It's just a no-brainer, and a lot of guys just can't, they overthink it and go, well, they've been on the 12-foot break. They're not going to make a move up there. I go, well, if 12 feet is only 100 yards from the shallows, they'll be up there, you know. They're going to go check it out.
I mean, right before you came up, it was like 40s, 30s, and then one day it like dropped to like 25 degrees. Yep. We were catching fish. It was snowing. It was a blizzard. Yep. We were catching fish in 30 feet of water, trolling at 1.5 miles an hour. Yep. Slow as crap. It was boring. I was eating chicken wings.
Hell yeah.
I wanted to pass out and die, but we were catching fish. And then the week it came up, dead zone. They were shallow.
Dunzo. Next up, Isaiah says, I'm brand new to muskie fishing and was wondering, were there any good spots in northeastern Wisconsin? Do you know of any that are near Menominee, Michigan? Northeastern Wisconsin, absolutely. That's going to put you up in that north woods. Heck, northeastern Wisconsin, we're talking what, Eagle River, Tyler?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right there. You got the Eagle River chain. You've got scuds of lakes. Tyler, you are the website master for how you guys do stuff up there. Explain to Isaiah the website he can go and look up with all the musky lakes up in that area.
On the Wisconsin DNR website, you can look up, there's like a whole chart of lakes that have muskies in them, and their rating from A to like C or whatever. A is listed as trophy class, but low population density, so your chances are lower of catching one. But if you catch one, it's most likely to be pretty big. Then there's like B or whatever, and that is a higher population density, but they might not be as big. But honestly, in my experience, I've on some of those B class lakes, I've caught some pretty big fish.
And that's the thing. A guy like Isaiah, he's new to the muskie game. He's brand new. Action lakes.
That's what you want, man.
Action lakes.
Go on there, find a lake that's 300 acres. Don't pick anything more than that.
No.
That's like a B class lake that has a high population density. Go out there. It's small. It's easy to manage. You can pick it apart in a couple days. Go out there. You'll get a shot at a fish. This coming spring, this summer, black silver bucktail. Black orange bucktail, throw that. If it's a high population lake, somebody's going to make a move on it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing is like getting that experience of, being able to spend more time on the water and seeing fish. I mean, that's the biggest thing is when you're a new muskie angler, having feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm stammering a little bit, but it's just like so freaking important to make the cast and have interactions. The more times you see a muskie coming into the figure eight, the more times you have to practice your figure eight.
And the less times you get less freaked out. Because I know with a lot of newer muskie anglers, when that fish first comes in, you're crapping your pants a little bit, or you stop the bait and you freak out. You pull the bait out of the water. I've seen it. It's after enough interactions, you just kind of get used to it.
Okay, man. Oh, goodness. We have so many here. I got to pick up the pace here, Guru. Dan and Seth, we love the podcast. We've been fishing for muskies for over a year, and have done well when trolling four lines. When trolling four lines, when a fish is on, how do we keep the other lines from tangling when boating the fish? Plus, I would love to give some advice to guys just starting out, but not, too much to type. Blah, 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 blah. Sorry. I can't read, Tyler. I've been on the water all day and just got off that trip. Okay. So Dan and Seth want to know, how do we keep a fish out of four lines when they're trolling, and what are some other starting angler things? So this sort of goes to the first question, the last question we did there. If I'm trolling four wide, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the boat in gear. I'm going to fight the fish against the boat, right? Now, that is a matter of where you're at, how deep you're running. A lot of factors come into this. But let's say, imagine in your head I've got a rod on either side of the boat and two rods at the back, right? if I get a hit on those rods that are inside the other rods, the guy that's going from the net, if you can't stay in gear, let's say I'm going to the right side of the boat, right? Bow, stern, all this fun stuff. Port, starboard, whatever you want to go for. I want to have my net man get the outside rod. If I've got an inside rod with a hook fish on it, get that rod that's in the way to a whole clear side of the boat, right? So we're going to pick what, we're going to determine what side we're going to land this fish on. So if I'm looking forward at the boat, I'm going to go look there at the left side or the right side. Clear the line that will be in your way. Leave the other two. They'll be all right. You know, they might get crossed, but they're not going to get completely tangled up. If you got to stop the boat, preferably is keep that thing in gear and at low speed, right? If you got a bunch of lines going, is keep the boat going, back the throttle down to just an idle where you're still advancing forward. If you're in a safe zone, you're not fishing too shallow, you're not trawling too shallow, and then just leave it in gear and grab the net and make it happen. What do you do? I know, Tyler, you, in some instances, you're trawling multiple lines. What do you do?
I usually, well, I have mine spread out with quite a few planers. I usually just try to, if it's, an, say it's like an inside fish, I try to fight that fish right in the middle.
And keep him, yeah, you got to control them.
Control them, which if it's a big fish, that can be hard. If it's like, if it's a big fish, I start pulling lines in. I usually speed up the boat a little bit, try to drive the hooks in the fish a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then I drag them. Just until I can get as many lines as I can, if I'm by myself or something,
dude,
or if I have someone inexperienced in the boat, then I get them in. But if it's like, otherwise, I just try to control them and keep them in between the planer boards.
I have done it multiple times where, let's say I'm running planers, I'll cut the freaking line.
Yeah, because they just float.
They just float. So the lure is still attached to the planer board, you know, and it just floats up. So if it's a real issue, it's a real big fish. Cut that line off. Don't do that if you got a sinking bait on there. Anyway, Adam says, when you have a day to go musky fishing on a new lake that you're, when you have a day to go musky fishing on a new lake that you are familiar with, do you come up with a game plan for hitting spots, or you just follow your instincts? So a lake that I know what I'm doing. I do this every day for a living. Every day I'm coming up with a game plan because every day is different. Okay, so what you want to do is on a body of water, you know, a body where you're familiar with, and you know, fish will use this spot or fish will use that spot. I'm going to consider everything before I head out. So cold front, warm front, wind, where's the wind been going? What's the wind doing? One thing that you need to look at, let's say you fish on the weekends, you know, you got a full-time gig and you get to fish the weekends. Well, if I know I'm going to go out on Saturday, I'm going to watch the weather starting as early as I can look. And you can sort of go, well, how's this body of water orientated? What's going on this week? What are the muskies doing while I'm not there? Okay. So if there's a, let's say there's a wind that's coming out of the north all week long, then you're going to have a better idea what's going to be going on Saturday when you get to fish. Look ahead. Be fishing before you go fishing. And I do this all the time where I go, this change just did this, so what is that going to amount to on this body of water? And in like when I'm gone, I mean, what I did every day when I was in Minocqua for an entire week, I started my day and I did the same routine every day. Where I looked at water levels and I looked at what the weather was doing. So when I walked back home and I went on my first guide trip, I was still on the fish. And they had changed a little bit. They didn't change too much, but I knew exactly what was going on ahead of time. So I never take it for granted like, okay, this lake is just going to, I'm going to fish it the same every time. You know, if you want to be consistent and you want to be smart, and you want to stay ahead of patterns, is be fishing every day, even when you're not fishing. I mean, once you've seen it enough and you go, okay, if the wind shifts, they're going to move to this side. And if it stays that way for 3 days, the bait will move over here. Right. And if something else changes, so you can like sort of know in your head, you go, that's what they're doing on Wednesday. Okay. And then it's going to warm up and the fronts are going to stop and it's going to calm down by Friday morning. So things will level out and you go, okay, this is what they'll be doing Saturday. Does that make sense, Tyler? Am I making any sense that you're sort of, you're on the water in your own head when you're not even on the water?
Yeah. You can kind of think about it as like, I'm a college student. So that's the reference I'm going to use, preparing for an exam.
Yeah.
Right. You're studying up. Your game planning, how you're going to attack the problems that are going to be presented to you. And then you get there and you're prepared. And it's just, it's like, okay, do this, this, that, and that, and I'm done. You know, like when I am thinking in the summer, I have a hot rock bite. I'm thinking, okay, what are the conditions, the wind direction? Okay, this rock hump, okay, this is the wind direction for today. It's out of the north or whatever.
Yeah.
I know this rock hump's good on this wind, this one on this one, this one on this one. This one's always good at sunset.
Right.
Okay, where am I going to go? Okay, yeah. I'm going to hit this one at moon. I'm going to hit this one right away when I get there. I'm going to recheck this one. I'm going to hit this point and come back. And you know what? I'm going to catch a couple fish in between. And that's usually how I set my day.
Yeah.
I go from spot to spot to spot based on the time of day.
I'll always have a game plan. And like I said, if you got big gaps in your fishing, go musky fishing in your head every day. Stay ahead of it. You know, you go... You can sort of like guesstimate. You go, okay, if we had a 10-degree temperature drop, the surface temperature is going to drop in the shallows. They're going to move out to the – just whether you're wrong or whether you're right, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. You know,
be musky fishing when you're not musky fishing. Look at the weather at work and go, what are they doing today? You know, based upon what you've seen in your past experience or what you've read or you've heard, sort of think about your body of water in that way, and you start staying more in tune with it. And so what will happen is, you know, on a day like I had today, I had a 5-fish day. And I went out, and I was right. Before, like, I knew where they were at, and I knew what they were doing before I started the truck. I'm not always right, but today it was a home run. Boom. Knew his aqua. I didn't even have to go searching for them. I knew where they're at. I knew what they wanted. Like I said, I was catching them while I was having my coffee this morning. Now, I don't do that every time, and I'm willing to change my plan. But once you start accumulating enough success like that, then you always know what's going on. That's the next level, is you know what they're doing without even having to see them. And I know we're sort of down the rabbit hole on this. Man, I'm way too tangent-y this evening. But that's the facts of, like, if I know that body of water, I should know what they're doing 365, 24-7. Where you at? What are you doing? Where are you going to be? Because that's what makes musky fishing awesome. It becomes less of a hunt and it becomes a catching experience. So anyway, the next one up is Hunter. He says, what state would you move to specifically for musky fishing? I'm certainly thinking about packing my bags, so to speak, and fishing is a massive part of my decision on where I want to move. He said, I'm a catfish and crappie guy starting to seriously get into musky fishing. Wisconsin. Period. Bar none. Tyler?
Wisconsin. Or Minnesota.
Or Minnesota.
Wisconsin or Minnesota.
Or Canada.
Or Canada.
That would be it.
It's closed right now, so you probably can't go there.
You
honestly
can definitely,
I think all of us would pick Lake of the Woods or Eagle.
Eagle easily. Lake of the Woods is trash. I'm kidding. Trav says, hey guys, what are your thoughts on green LED lights on the outside of your boat for night fishing? I've heard it makes a huge impact in seeing the lure in the fish boat side. Also, the red amber lights inside the boat, keeping the bugs away somewhat and being able to run the trolling pedal. What are your thoughts on lights?
No.
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 Nope. They don't like lights. I'm not. Maybe the green LEDs don't do anything. What I've done in my boat is up under the rail, I have installed white LEDs, like, and it illuminates the deck of the boat without the light getting outside of the boat, if you will. So I can see my feet. We're not stepping on anything or tripping. I don't like light in the water. I've heard so much stuff about how do you fish at night and you know when to figure it, right? Here's the trick.
You got to feel it.
You got to feel it, but you got to be ready.
Yeah.
Okay. So my rod tip is in the water long before the bait gets there. And I feel that swivel or that anything hit that rod tip, I'm right into it. I'm setting up. You get a feel for it. You know, these guys are like glow beads or tie a knot or a bobber stop and all this stuff. If you're set up for it and you're anticipating it, it's just like you can feel the timing. I can feel the shift in the vibration of the rod. I can feel the tension of the line. I know a bait's getting close. I have an advantage of doing it every day. But if you pay attention to things like that and you go, when a bait's getting close to the boat, what does it feel like versus what does it feel like off the boat? Okay. And this is a stupid thing, is the vibration, when you get closer to the rod tip, you can feel more vibration. That transfers in the rod, it transfers in the reel, that whole thing. One reason we like the shield rods is you can feel it. It has sensitivity. You hear people talk about rod sensitivity. If you have a pull cue rod with no sensitivity, you're not going to feel anything. You know, I don't need bobbers. I don't need the lights. You're going to miss fish with lights and bobbers and all that crap. Get used to knowing what the baits do. Be in tune with the baits. If it's a bucktail, you can feel it. And that thing's coming in. You can feel the vibration increasing. You know, the shorter amount of line you have out, the more intense the vibration is. And you can feel it. Am I just crazy tonight, Tyler, or am I making sense?
No, dude, that's what I do. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you can, you just have to, during the day,
mm-hmm.
when that lure's getting close, memorize what it feels like, the one that you're going to throw at night. Memorize what it's going to feel like mm-hmm. when you're getting close to the boat, last 10 feet, last 5 feet, last yeah. 2 feet.
Yep.
And be prepared to figure eight. First couple times at night, it's going to be a little scary.
She said scary. Me and you on that one lake in a lightning storm, pitch black. Remember mm-hmm. that?
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
Now that I say that.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
And we're standing out there like,
it ain't going to hit us. We're fine.
We're going, yeah, man. Yeah. Who's trying to impress the other one right now? Because I really don't want to be here. And I remember we
were out there and it was honestly
scary.
I've seen a lot of crazy Wisconsin Canadian thunderstorms. You have too. And yeah. that was probably the most scariest, terrifying one
that
we have
drive
both
back,
ever seen.
It was 3.5-4 footers on the way back from like, we're driving between reefs and I was just like, oh man, this sucks.
And it was like daylight out and it was pitch black because there's so much lightning. It was almost daylight. It was insane.
Oh no, that's the only way I saw you. Like if the lightning would hit, I would see you. And I'm like, I was standing. I'll tell you, it takes a lot to get me off the rail of the boat and in the gunwale of the boat throwing, or down in the body of the boat throwing. I was in the body of the boat throwing baits.
Like we counted like 77 strikes in a minute or something, something ridiculous.
It wasn't in a minute, and it wasn't musky strikes. It was like 70 lightning strikes in like 10 minutes, and we're like going, we could. Well, the problem was if people are going, we're not that crazy, and we're fishing it. We couldn't go. It was like it wasn't hitting where we were at. It was like every direction we were not. So if we headed to the dock, it's like lightning. We go behind. So we're out on a reef going, all right, where are we going to go and what are we going to do? Anyway, next up, a guy named Tyler says, I fish from shore and I'm having a heck of a time catching muskies this year. It's getting so frustrating. I've only caught 2. My question is regarding what lures to use. This season's weather has been a mix all year. He said, I'm in Ontario and it finally got cold, but now for the next 2 weeks, it's 15 degrees Celsius. I'm big time confused with what I should be throwing. I'm assuming the water temps won't be that cold in 15 degrees Celsius. I fish the Morai rivers. I won't say where he fishes. He's fishing some rivers. I don't even know what I'm so hillbilly. How cold's 15 degrees Celsius, Tyler?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Let me look it up here. I'm sure somebody's up going, I did it in my head already because I'm smart. Well, you know what? Have fun at work. 59 degrees.
Oh.
59-60. Here's the deal. You're fishing rivers and dams, okay? I won't say where you're fishing. We just did the thing with Cody Dalton. We talked a lot about rivers. I've talked about rivers. Got a vlog on the app about rivers. Pools and eddies. They're always in pools and eddies. Winter, spring, summer, and fall. If that water's moving where you're fishing, they're going to be pools and eddies. What do you want to throw this time of year? You got a little bit warmer temps here. Put this is when we get in this time of year, definitely don't take the bucktails out. Unless it's a big warm-up, shallow water, things of that nature. Be thinking rubber. Be thinking glide baits. A little bit bigger profile and a little slower presentation. You get in the slack water on those rivers or by those dams, you're going to find muskies. They're always in the – they're lazy. They're big. They're dumb. They're lazy. They're going to be in slack water pools. Get in those areas and you're going to find some fish. Josh says, I'm looking to find more info on the chatterbaits you guys were talking about on the last show. Where to purchase and where to email. Okay. I don't pre-screen these. So, Josh, I will tell you this. Those chatterbaits are made by Spitfire Muskie Baits. They will be at the Muskie Shop here very, very soon. They're the ones me and Tyler throw. We'll get you more on that. I'll announce when those show up at the store there. Leon says, hey, Muskie Mans. Thanks for talking my last question. I didn't intend to suck every Pepsi out of your bloodstream, but thanks for taking the lead serious, the lead seriously. So this is the dude that asked about, you know, adding toxic metals into the water. But remember that question? It was a while ago about, you know, we're throwing bucktails and all these baits that have lead in them. Lead is not good in water. Look at, was that, what town was that in Michigan, Tyler? You know,
Flint,
you know, there's lead in my water. Well, you know, we're blame it on the bucktails. So, you know, lead is harmful to humans, is obviously harmful to animals, blah, 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 blah. But he did point out that the Muskie Shop has a great assortment of low or no lead alloy weights, which is true. I'm looking at this and he points out that a lot of things are available in those alloy metals that are non-harmful. So if you're very concerned with the environment, as we all should be, you can get alternative metals for bucktails or weights. If that's your thing, it's not mine. So, give them fish lead. Tyler, I fish with mercury. Literally, all my bucktails. I have just a glass bead full of mercury for weight.
I'm a plutonium man myself.
Actually, yeah, that's an inside joke there. No, like I said, it's a good point. I'm sure things will go that way. I mean, the problem is this, like with lead, when you look at these alloys versus the cost of lead, the cost is insane. I mean, if you were doing, let's say we're going to do a jerk bait with alloy in it, you're going to be paying substantially more.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot. He also continues, says, I have another conservation question. Will you go barbless? I've gone barbless and will never go back. Better, cleaner, easier releases, smooth hooks, set into the fish easier and sticks just as well. With all the advancements in technology and knowledge making catching easier for so many more amateurs, we really need to do something simple to reduce mortality. So we've talked about barbless hooks before. They are an easier to release thing, right? If you look at a barb and versus a barbless hook, okay, literally the barb is just sticking out just a few millimeters or just a few fractions of an inch out. It helps the hook from backing out, right? So if anybody's thinking, what's the barb, no barb? They come out easy, that's true, but I mean, you're still piercing the fish. You're still, you know, you're still putting a hole in it. I know it helps, but is it going, how much will it help? I don't know. Tyler, what are your thoughts? Like I said, I mean, I know, I'm sure in the grand scheme of things, it would be the best thing to do, but one good head shake without the right attention, he's gone, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, they help him from not backing out. I mean, the exit wound with the barb is probably substantially bigger from a barbless, but we're talking minuscule kind of size ranges here.
Yeah, that's why I was pointing out the size of the barb.
I mean,
yeah.
you're still like stabbing the fish with a thin piece of metal. The exit wound really doesn't make a difference.
My problem is this is 99% of the fish I immediately cut the hook anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. That's where I'm at. I've encouraged that for a long time. I, you know, it's just one of those deals. He points out the thing, and this is the point that I would hang on. He says, you know, there's a lot more people that are new to the sport. Number one, you need to be doing your homework on what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and have an action plan for when you catch one of these things, right? We've got a lot of good stuff in the 101 section of the app covering that, but you got to have the tools. You got to watch some videos and read some articles about what to do. But number one for me is hook cutters. Just cut the hook. The hooks are so inexpensive. In the grand scheme of things, a hook, a quarter through a dollar?
Mm-hmm.
Replace the hook. Shameless plug, Muskie Shop sells hooks. You can get the call Jay at the Muskie Shop and say, I cut the hooks on a 6-inch Phantom. I need replacements. Load up.
They have so many hooks. After I lost my hook box on Highway 70.
If you find it, mail it to the Tower Energy.
By the way, there's 7-0s scattered all over Highway 70. If I pop your tire, sorry.
Good luck to you. No, it's one of those things.
I was able to replace them all.
You know, cut the hook, be done with it. I will say this. A fish that hits a barbless hook and sucks it down into its gill rakers is just as in trouble as a fish with barbs.
Absolutely.
It's all about how you hook them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing for me. And like I said, I'm not poo-pooing what you're saying. I know barbless would help. I can just, as a guide, I can't even imagine. Like, you know, I saw some fish get off this week. I saw a handful of lost muskies. Had there been barbless hooks involved, there would have been a lot more. So that would be my thought process. Like I said, in a perfect world, we would get them in the net through hypnosis, and we wouldn't have to hook them. Brad says, hey, guys, great podcast. My question is about dealing with missed strikes while using sucker minnows. Is following up with a figure eight after a missed strike an effective technique in this case using a sucker minnow? Tyler Andrews, you are a sucker. You take the lead, buddy.
I mean, can I be honest with you? I've never figure eighted a sucker after a missed strike. I've actually just let it sit back down. For example, we have my dad hooked a mid-40s muskie 5-6 years ago in the middle of November. We had it all the way up to net. He lost it. He, in a fit of rage, said some choice words, slammed that sucker back down as hard as he could on the water surface. It sank down. That muskie came back and inhaled that sucker. No figure eight involved.
Yeah.
And that fish felt steel. He saw me. He knew I was there.
Yeah.
And we still call him. Still caught him. I guarantee there's a guy out there that probably caught him figure eight in a sucker. I think that probably works.
Just not something you run into a lot. A lot of things.
No.
One thing I'd do is this is as Pete Maine has got a mean quick strike set.
Mm-hmm.
Go check out one of his vids or something, because like the way he does it, he makes sure that the boat's in the right alignment, everything's lined up, and we're going to hit that fish the right way. Sort of emulate that. That's what I've done in the past, because he's sort of the master of that. Chris says, Cody Dalton talks about fishing in the south and transitioning from larger bodies of water to river systems in the fall to find more active fish. Does this mean moving to entirely different water? Is it a matter of simply heading up tributaries like you might during pre-spawn? Okay, so basically what we're looking at in that situation with Cody and myself and other people is when we start getting those temp drops and fish come on these big reservoirs or big bodies of water, there's a lot more territory they can go to. Fish that are hemmed up in rivers and shallow bodies of water that predominantly spend their time there, they have less places to go. And so if we're talking about some of these shallow rivers, you know, the fish that live there year round, they might break off and go from that shallow littoral zone. They might go down to that whopping 10-foot deep spot, you know. They can't really go deeper than, say the river runs 15, 16 feet. We know the fish are between 16 and zero. And so it's really about narrowing your scope, narrowing your search field. When you have tributaries, let's say you have a reservoir that has two or three rivers coming into it, your fish that live in the main basin of that lake are in the main basin. Your river fish are still in your river. So you're going to have two different fish doing two different things. So the way I'd approach that is check that main basin first. If nothing's happening, fish those tributaries in a similar fashion, but it's a smaller search parameter. You know, you've got less water to cover. So that's the point of that, going to smaller rivers or smaller bodies of water in the fall, is because, you know, when they drop down those break lines are a little bit more accessible. And the last one up is Blaine. When I see a straight up and down big fish mark on my electronics, they seem to be suspending fish in deep water. What are the best approaches to try to catch fish, or should I even bother? I'm relatively new to serious muskie fishing, and all my muskie buddies tell me to concentrate on shoreline lake points. It's hard to ignore these marks. So Blaine's seeing big marks on his electronics. What do you do? I'll start by saying, if I'm seeing them right under the boat, I'm going to jig them with a Bondi. Do it all the time. Catch some of them. A lot of the suspended fish that you see in deep water, you're not going to catch. Sometimes those aren't muskies. That's the other tricky thing, depending on where you're at. The other thing, if I'm seeing a bunch of suspended fish in deep water, I'm going to troll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a way to get suspended fish. You can cast suspended fish. You can jig them. You can drop a bulldog down there. But the reason people are telling you to focus on shallower areas is the fish that are up shallow are generally more active. That's just been the case of what I've seen. Tyler, what do you think on suspendos up there? What are you seeing?
Trolling, man. I was going to say jigging, but you stole my idea.
You stole from me.
Anyway, I mean, if I'm seeing like balls of bait fish and then a couple big bananas around it, around the big balls of bait fish.
Not even. It's too late at night. I'm not even going to take advantage of that.
I will troll at sometimes very erratically if there's a lot of bait fish. Try to stand out with some chartreuse colors, bright colors. But I troll them at different angles, hit every angle of those marks.
All right, so that's wonderful. I couldn't think of I was trying to think of a contest on all podcast. I'm brain dead. I've been guiding all day. First person that shows me, okay, this is corny, but I'm proud that I did that new site. So if you send me a screenshot, right, to muskie360app@gmail.com, and show that you placed an order at the new Muskie Shop website, I will send you 3 juniors inlines.
Ooh. Son.
You buy a bait from the Muskie Shop, you get 3 free ones from me. That's a pretty good deal, isn't it? You could even just send it. You don't even have to screenshot it. You could send it to the app and just send what your order number is, because I can check that and make sure you're not a liar.
Already placed my order.
Oh, Tyler Andrews is the winner. No, you're not. You can't win these. You're leading people to a treasure you cannot possess. So, proof to me you've bought something from the new amazing website I built. Thank you. With the help of my lovely wife, who did all the heavy lifting. And I'll send you 3 juniors in lines. Tyler, it is late. Late. We're going to bounce on this one. I promise we will be way pepsicated and crazy next week. Thank you, folks. Catch you next time.
I like my women like I like my muscular. Big, fat, stupid, and dumb.